Hello, everybody, and welcome back to The Forgotten Conservative. It is, again, July 16th, 2022, 0836. This would probably wrap it up, assuming I go the whole hour. I don't know why I take notes or jot stuff, ideas down, because I didn't glance at them in that third hour. Matter of fact, after I did it between hours one and two, and, you know, pretty much stayed on global warming, except when I diverted talking about my sweetheart and making sure that your spouse, significant other, knows how you feel, especially marriage, you know, a serious, significant relationship, especially if you have kids. The best thing you can do outside of taking care of the kids and nurturing, loving, all that stuff, is being an example for the kids. I tried to, even if nothing else in front of the kids, be a good example. I know I didn't 100% succeed. Nevertheless, being older, wiser, there's things that you always hear you wish you could take back. I don't follow quite that same line of thinking, because I realized that in my 53, I think it's 53, 68, and this is, yeah, so 8 and 2 is 4. So I'll be 54 in a couple of months. So if I changed just one small detail of my history, in all likelihood, I would not be sitting here opening up a fourth hour talking to whoever's out there listening, assuming that, you know, there is listeners. You know, it's kind of cathartic for me in one sense, but man, you only live once. You know, kids grow like weeds. They're only young once. You only get one chance. The kids, chances are, under the natural order of life and cycle, life cycles, families, youngins, etc., the kids will grow up and be gone. But your spouse, in a perfect world, you'll be with till death do you part. You know, I have always placed a high value on traditional values, traditions in general, societal traditions. I cannot sit here and say I've always been a good boy, but I can say that as far as principles, I will do things for, I guess, I don't know if expediency is the right word. Convenience, maybe convenience is a better word. To get through the day, to be prudent, so to speak. And I know prudent isn't the right word, but in other words, I've mentioned I'm moving to Maine. So I'm going to be moving to Maine, living with my sweetheart and her two kids. Eventually we have plans for, you know, everybody to move to Florida. So it's a temporary move. My traditional instincts, values, morals, so to speak, is it, I know it's temporary. It may not make it any better, but that's my rationalization. Is it's a temporary move? Once we get settled or whatever, I have no, at this point, no hesitation in marrying this woman. That's how significant the relationship is. And I want her to know how I feel. For you guys, you can laugh at me, poo-poo it, think I'm sappy, whatever. I don't care. But there's little things you can do that women dig, that women eat up. I don't do those things because I know that it's simply something that a woman enjoys. I do it because I want to do it. I don't want there to be any mistake how I feel. And if I can take a post-it note and write something like, which I've done similar type of things, but the last time I was visiting, I left her a couple of post-it notes. One, I put under, I think it was some kind of makeup thingamajig, but I wrote something like, thank you for the wonderful time. You know, very appreciative or whatever. I love you. And put it up under whatever that was, makeup case, whatever it was. So at some point, she would be cleaning or doing something and just randomly find it. And it would be ideal if she was having a bad day or feeling lonely or stressed or whatever, and finds it and it picks up her spirits. But I'm not going to be greedy. I just want to leave her a note, which this particular visit I left too, in a different place on the other one, but that she could find. And when she did, it would pick up her spirits, even if she was on a high that particular day. And know without a shadow of a doubt how I felt. Little things like that. Postcards. Of course, it's hard to find postcards. But postcards are simple. They're, I don't know, what's a stamp? 40, 50 cent, whatever it is. But to buy a postcard, put a stamp on it, and send it to her through the mail. Don't bring it home like a greeting card. Although greeting cards throughout the year is also a nice touch. But there's little things like that, guys, that you can do. Women, I don't know, because men, you know, y'all are weird. We haven't figured y'all out, and I'm sure it's vice versa. But again, this advice is not, it's like Christmas. I don't give it. I don't want to do for my sweetheart because I expect something in return. You know, what's the Christmas saying? It's better to give than receive. I give because I want to give, because I want to display my feelings, my affection, etc. Not for any other reason. And I'm telling you guys, you'd be surprised at doing little things like that. Even if you have manly, so to speak, motivations. Even if that's, you know, what you're shooting for, you're still doing something that I can promise you that girl will go to work and tell her best friend or a coworker or a family member. It will be significant. And they will, hopefully, they will appreciate it. So, be better. Do better with your women. I'm not perfect by any means, but I want to show my gratitude, appreciation, love, devotion, and display it. Make no bones about it. Hell, I'm moving to Maine. Ice, snow. So you know I must be ate up with this chick. But hey, you know, I was in baseball since I'm 5, 6 years old up until 6, 7 years ago, roughly. And that old saying, take one for the team. So we're a team, we're a partnership. So that's what I'm doing. And I don't think twice about it. So nevertheless, guys, treat your woman nice with respect. And set a good example if you do still have kids present. Because they're only young once. And you set a good example. You set the expectations that you want them to have looking for a spouse. I think it's pretty vital and important because, as I said in one of the previous hours, part of the goal in certain minority communities, at least, was to destroy the family structure. But that's one of the things that I have been unable to understand about a large portion of the Black community. Because when you look at it from a results-oriented perspective, in other words, you put 40 years of whatever, war on poverty, giving Blacks a hand up, ensuring that it's not a handout, it is a hand up, help when they're in trouble, has done nothing but destroy the core family. In fact, before this, maybe late 40s, mid 50s, when I heard this stat, and I think I mentioned it on a previous podcast several months ago. Now, whether or not that particular podcast made the air or was scrapped, I don't know. But I know I said it, that when those programs, when primarily LBJ started the, what's he call it? That's not the new generation, whatever his version of social construction, which it's my word, it's a euphemism, to begin the agenda, the long-term Democrat agenda. So whenever that started, let's say mid-60s, okay, Kennedy, I think the year was 63, he was assassinated, November. LBJ took over, won the next election, so he served maybe 5 years. I think it was called the Great Society. I get his and FDR's two boondoggles mixed up. The point is, at the point when LBJ started this agenda, this vision, this legacy, which you hear people talk about, this blankety blank, who's our president now, he's already worrying about his agenda, which is just, par for the course. But the dude I don't want to get started down that rabbit hole. When LBJ started those social programs, welfare, food stamps, the quote-unquote war on poverty, a percentage of the family unit, the core family unit, i.e. husbands and wives staying together, raising their families, so on and so forth. That core family unit, the percentage was remarkably higher in Black families. Now, I say remarkably, I want to say 10%. I could be wrong, but I do know what is fact is that a higher percentage of black families stayed together than white families, marriages, couples, etc. Going from memory, because it's been, I don't know, 10 years since I've heard this. It was back during Obama, when the big printing of money and spending bills happened after 07, 08. Whenever it was, from memory, so don't quote me, I want to say it, that number was about 10%. It seems high, but for some reason, that number sticks in my head with this particular stat, story, allegory, whatever you want to call it. But again, like I said, I have no doubt in my mind that even if it was 1% or 2%, black families stayed together longer than the white family unit. And when these policies took over, it started the destruction of the black family unit almost immediately. And again, my original observation is, if you look at the scoreboard, if you look at the results, if you look at, you know, what was it? Who was it? Was it Janet Jackson that said, "What have you done for me lately?" Okay. If you look at what those policies have done for, at least for the black community, and where, you know, that, I guess, let's just say race, where that group, that minority group, so to speak, is at today. If you just had an open mind, if you just questioned things, asked, you know, get on the Google and say, what do we have to show for it? You, chances are, a rational person would never vote Democrat ever again. But then you have destructive, harmful rhetoric. Joe Biden, and when I say he's always been mean, he's always been nasty. He was for segregation. In other words, keeping black and whites separated at schools, buses, you know, I can't say water fountains. I don't, but I know buses and schools, etc. He was for that. I know in 2012, he pulled a Hillary. She was famous for it and was speaking probably at a black church and used his best black accent, which I think is highly offensive. Now, I'm not black. I can't definitively say that it is offensive to black people. I personally view it the same as when they talk about whoever, celebrity, politician, whoever, as a teenager, doing blackface. Especially if it's like for a school play or something innocent, without malicious intent. I don't find necessarily the harm if again, without malice, you know, if it's something that the school has, like a play, because I don't think a teenager, a student, should buck the system, so to speak. Now, if it's a party or something along those lines, I agree. I think the blackface unequivocally would be as offensive as the fake accent. I don't know which is more offensive, because in these two cases, whether it's blackface or the fake accent, you're mocking. And I think it boils down to the intent. There's a reason why you're putting whatever, shoe polish or whatever, on your face at a party or Halloween or whatever. But you can't ID intent. You can't in a case like that. Especially these guys that so often have gotten caught up in it over the last 5 years or so. They were all high school, college, etc. So considerably younger. I mean, we were there. I wouldn't want some of the things I did, of course, in no way, shape, or form relating to race, just the stupid things you did in your younger days. Again, doesn't excuse it. But when you're a grown man, a politician, when you're the vice president of the United States, and you go to a black church and you put on your black accent to pander for votes, to repeat tired, worn out platitudes, tropes that have been used as long as anybody can remember, and you say about, of all people, Mitt Romney, the milquetoast Mormon, you know, just boring, dull establishment. I mean, Romney's dad was in politics. But you put on the fake accent and you say, if Romney is elected, he wants to put y'all back in chains? How not only absurd, that's race baiting, given the way that they try to paint the founding and slavery and how effed up our founding was and bad guys, the founders, the framers, just bad, horrible POS human beings. And you got the vice president that uses a fake accent, black accent, and harmful rhetoric. And if I was in that audience, I would have raised, even if I was in that audience as a white person, I would have raised hell, because I would have been uncomfortable to hear that to fellow citizens. Certainly, if I was a black man and heard that, I'd want to kick his ass, because not that I personally experienced slavery, but it may have been your ancestors, may not have been. You may have just come from Africa yourself, or one of the Caribbean islands, or South American. It doesn't matter. I would have been offended as a white person in that audience, and I would have wanted to whip his ass. As I say that as a black man, I can only project. Obviously, I can't definitively 100% make that assertion. I know, again, if I was that offended as a white person by the comment, I can't even imagine as a black person. Whether you have experienced racism or not, you know, I couldn't have taken it, laying down. The comment that the dude made about, I think he said, it was either, you can't go into a Dunkin' Donuts, maybe it was a 7-Eleven, without seeing somebody with a dot on their head, I think was the quote. How insensitive is that? How about that takes some giant-sized balls My dad would say, as he did when I was growing up, with balls that big, you have to carry them in a wheelbarrow. That's just anybody else would be tarred and feathered, you know, just ruined, at least for that particular election. Major damage control, if when he made that comment, which I believe he was the nominee. Well, you can't take that back. He's the nominee, you know, that's what you get. I believe he was also the nominee. And this all, everything but, well, the first two examples were past comments. If you don't vote Democrat, you're not black, that comment. And this particular comment being interviewed on, I think it was a morning TV show. I know there's a video of the interview. And the reporter says, have you taken a test on your cognitive ability? Now, I don't think the reporter, who was a black guy, I don't think he was asking in a malicious way. I think he was asking to, because the Republicans were talking about, you know, Biden losing his marbles, Biden's lack of interaction with the public, the lack of interaction with the press, the lack of campaign stops, the lack of, you know, general overall camera time. And it was a huge thing that Republicans were questioning. So I think this reporter was asking in the vein that, have you done this, you know, gotten a cognitive test of, you know, test your reason faculties, whatever, so we can put this issue behind us. And Biden just, again, nasty. Hey, man, are you crazy? Before you came in here, did you take a test for cocaine? You know, obviously a crack, at least I interpreted a crack at the dude because he was black, a minority, whatever. And the stereotype, and it, to me, it would have been no different than Biden saying, before you came in here for this interview, did you eat some fried chicken or did you eat some watermelon? I view that remark in the same vein. Again, that's just from a white person's point of view. I know when Fuzzy Zeller, the golfer at the Masters, I think it was Tiger's first year as a pro at the Masters, which he ended up winning, Fuzzy Zeller made the comment after maybe the third round that if Tiger wins, to make sure that next year they don't serve fried chicken. And the media just kicked his ass all day long and twice on Sunday. There was no media outlet that I know of, major, ABC, NBC, ESPN, etc., that explained the comment in context. So at the Masters, if you win, the following year, I think it's the night before the tournament, you know, you're the reigning champion. So the night before the tournament, there's a big dinner with all the players, maybe whoever, wives, media, I don't know who all attends. But for that dinner, the following year, when you're defending your Masters title, you get to pick the meal. And they have a menu, let's just say. You're the one that picks the meal that is served that night. There's been years where people pick things and a lot of golfers didn't show up. There's been years where golfers have picked hamburgers and hot dogs. If the golfer, the reigning champion, the defending champion, the night before the following year's Masters, if that champion does not pick a meal, it automatically defaults to a traditional Southern dinner, which includes fried chicken. And a lot of people, in an effort to not offend or not make a decision, not, in other words, they didn't have the balls to say pizza or hamburgers and hot dogs, you know. So a lot of times the golfers, the champions, would default to the traditional Southern meal. So when Fuzzy Zeller says, you know, next year for dinner, just don't do the fried chicken, he wasn't talking about Tiger Woods, his race. He was talking about something completely different, but you didn't hear it. Fuzzy Zeller lost contracts. He did golf clubs, I think, for Kmart at the time. They yanked it. Every single endorsement deal he had, they canned him, fired him. And Biden can make these comments with zero blowback or repercussions from his own party. No condemnation. I mean, look at Clinton with perjury, losing his law license, and the sordid details of at least Monica Lewinsky. Okay. Also, at least Paul Jones, which is the case he was testifying in, where he was convicted of perjury and lost his law license. So we know those two situations. It took until maybe 2020, 2019, 2020 to hear any significant Democrat leaders, House, Senate, etc., to criticize or condemn his actions. And only that was, you know, during the height of the Me Too movement. I never heard the criticism for his association and Hillary's association with Epstein. We know that 7 times he declined Secret Service details to fly with Epstein and presumably go to the island. No outrage. Nothing. So you can't say that, you can make the argument that Biden is moderate, but these policies that he's promoting is extremely harmful. And if he has these nasty feelings to in situations where he's trying to appeal, you know, under a different circumstance or a different person, you might say that in these interviews, the candidate is trying to put his best foot forward. He's begging or asking for your votes and potentially financial support. He's asking you to trust him with your sons and daughters in war, conflicts, etc. He's asking you to trust him with the economy, with policy decisions, that he's going to have the best interests in the country as a whole. And this is the language and the rhetoric and the nastiness that this man has displayed his entire career. But in the 2020 election, not only, I think, I would venture to say he campaigned less than Hillary. Here's an interesting fact. Now, my second wife was apolitical. She had her feelings, her thoughts. We didn't have political discussions. She may ask me a question about something in the news or something along those lines. But there wasn't certainly a back and forth. At some point in maybe 2017, I left June 2018. So it was after Trump was elected. I would say at least maybe 9 months to a year, year and a half after Trump was elected. We're talking whatever however it got there. And I made the comment. I said that Hillary could not campaign, that they limited her appearances, her time, questions, the whole nine yards. It was structured. It was like writing a play or a screenplay for an actor. Not that Hillary's a good actor or a good politician or even a good person. She's a horrible person. I have no issues saying Hillary Clinton is evil. None whatsoever. Not one iota of a hesitation. Anyway, so I make the comment, and she's like, what are you talking about? I said, well, 4th of July, I think it was 4th of July, maybe Memorial Day. But she's at an event, and she almost passes out. They have to pick her up to prevent her from falling and, you know, probably cracking her noggin. So they prevent her from falling, and in the process, she loses her shoe. The vehicle speeds off, trying to get her out of camera view. And at some point, whether it was an aide, maybe, what was the pervert's wife's name? I forget her name. Anthony Weiner's wife, who was that particular relationship, there's no telling. I'll just leave it at that. But it may have been Uma, whatever her name was, that came back to get the shoe. I don't know. But somebody in the campaign picked up the shoe that came off of Hillary Clinton trying to get the hell out of Dodge to avoid people questioning her physical stamina, ability to do the job, etc. And so I just made the comment that the whole campaign was like that up until that point, but especially at that point, they were doing damage control. And I don't know if she was as big a drinker at that time as she was after the election. I can't make that assessment. I just know that they limited her appearances. They limited her minutes at said appearances, interviews. Again, questions, the whole everything. And so when I mentioned this to my wife at the time, she's like, what the hell are you talking about? I said, well, were you thinking, did you have a clue why every time you turned on the TV, regardless of the channel, you see a Trump rally, thousands or tens of thousands of people standing in line in the rain? In 2-3 days a week, you might see a Hillary campaign event, and they have to basically, I used reference of the Jacksonville football team, cover seats to squeeze everybody in the camera shot to make it appear to be full. And whereas Trump's getting thousands of supporters at these rallies, she's getting 150, you know, like 50 people, 100 people, a couple hundred people. Or what the campaign started doing was paying people to attend the rallies and clap like friggin' trained seals. So she'd had no idea. And of course it worked. She almost won. They just didn't, in my opinion, no documentation, just an opinion. They just didn't cheat enough. Just an opinion, not an accusation or whatever. But they did the same thing with Biden under the guise, at least he had an excuse of COVID. And they milked it for everything it was worth. But those of us who knew, those that remembered 2016 and the excuses and the damage control, the carefully tailored, structured events, so on and so forth, knew that this was the same thing. And actually Biden was in one way worse because he doesn't inspire. I mean, Hillary really didn't inspire. She probably, you could say, make an argument for Hillary that she inspired women, certain women, whether it's all women or whatever. But a large portion of women were turned off by Hillary. So she did have whatever percentage of that demographic. She wasn't exciting. She wasn't inspiring. She wasn't nearly as bad as Biden or weak in that regard. But she was and is a first-class bitch. She's a nasty person. And they've tried to hide it the best they can. The Democrat Party, the media, etc. They've tried to hide it. They've tried to rewrite who she is. But you just, again, I used this earlier. A leopard doesn't change its spots. You can try to be somebody you ain't, but you can only hold it open, or, you know, hold you can only put on that mask, that charade, for so long. Because just like with Biden, those last two comments that he made during this campaign, if you don't vote for Democrats, you're black, you're not black, and what are you, crazy man? Did you get tested for cocaine before this interview? With those two comments, his personality, his character, everything you needed to know about that man is right there in those two comments in this campaign, 2020 campaign. But he was a uniter. He wasn't a divider. He was a moderate, reach across the aisle, you know, work with the other side, all that horse shit. And the media carried the water, as the saying goes. And now we're paying for it. And that's why we have to fight. We have to take back our country. And I say fight again, figuratively. In no way advocate violence. But they're the ones. We have to be sure that we don't resort to that, that we can beat them in the arena of ideas, policy, history. They're the ones with the emotions, the feelings, the anger. And we can't resort to the same things they do, like January 6th. Which is still I haven't covered it or discussed it enough. I'll try to. January 6th is not killing our economy right now. Just a quick assessment on it. All of the statutes, all of the things that they're trying to pin on Trump, under normal circumstances, with everything I know, and I'm not claiming know all or anything like that, but just everything that I know, no reasonable prosecutor or attorney general would indict Trump. I'm not talking about any associates. I'm talking strictly President Trump. No prosecutor, U.S. attorney, or attorney general who is any type of decent attorney would indict Trump based on what is there now. The biggest drawback, as far as I know, the biggest reason why, under normal circumstances, because any of those laws or statutes or any of that stuff that the Democrats are trying to say he did or he's guilty of, every single one of those things, there has to be intent. What is one of the biggest gripes or gripes if you're a Democrat, or praise if you're a Republican? That basically Trump spouts off at the mouth and says what he feels. Doesn't necessarily think about what he says, especially at a campaign rally or something, event like that. He just talks off the cuff. Most of the time, no teleprompter. He's just talking from the brain and from the heart, or any combination thereof. Now, with that being said, I'm not making an excuse. There was nothing. I still don't think there was nothing, intent or not. He didn't violate the law. He didn't break the law. Nevertheless, attorneys can agree to disagree on the violation of a law. But not only do you have to prove that he actually broke said law, you have to prove in every instance of these things that committee has brought up so far, every single charge, you not only have to prove that, again, the law was broken, you have to prove intent. Now, the Attorney General or the U.S. Attorney in Washington, D.C. may want to roll the dice and indict him, because they know that Washington, D.C. has over 90% that voted for Biden. So you're not going to get a fair trial in Washington, D.C. They know that in the, what was it, Michael Sussman trial, who was the Hillary campaign lawyer that lied to the FBI, that was tried a couple of months ago and exonerated. It's a D.C. jury. I think three of the jurors voted for Hillary. One of them, or two of them, I think one donated to Hillary, one donated to AOC. So another juror, may have been the judge, may have been, I don't know, but it was some type of official, whether it was a juror or an attorney or judge or whomever. That person's daughter was on the soccer team, or had been on the same soccer team as the defendant. The point to that is, I don't necessarily think it was a fair trial. I'm not surprised by the not guilty verdict. If it could have been held somewhere else, it may have been a different outcome. But it wasn't held somewhere else. It was held in Washington, D.C. And back in the old days, there used to be an expression down here in the South. Well, if my aunt had balls, she'd be my uncle. Well, dadgum, you probably can't say that no more. You know, I still like the saying. It makes the point. You can't say what would have happened if you'd had a change of venue. Just like if they do indict Trump and the judge refuses to grant a change of venue and a trial is held in D.C. and the prosecutor has the burden to show the violation of law as well as the intent, I wouldn't want to be in Trump's shoes. I can tell you that much. Because there is no guarantee that you're going to get a fair trial. But again, in a civil society politics that for our entire history, we didn't criminalize politics, disagreements, opposite points of view. We didn't disagree with somebody and try to get dirt and criminalize and arrest them. At least on the surface, this bold, this obvious, nothing hidden, stated agenda. So there's, you know, that's one of the reasons why I hope Trump doesn't run. I think the decision may simply boil down to, if Trump runs, it may cause some prosecutor or U.S. attorney to indict. If he decides not to run, well, he can't do any damage. So, and it may be just that simple. And so he's got a campaign under that cloud. And it, and that's not the only thing. Even if he gets off there, they're still going to attack him. They're still going to come after him. Not that, I mean, they would do that to DeSantis, Cruz, whomever. But I've never seen or heard of it being that vicious, that aggressive in any case in history. Have not heard of that kind of treatment to an opposing politician anywhere, in any country, any time, anywhere. Maybe Jesus. I don't know. And I don't know. I say that because a thought came to my head. I certainly don't mean it sacrilegiously. For the life of me, I can't think of anybody being just unfairly treated that way. Maybe I'll think of it. Maybe somebody listening has an idea. Right now, 9:29, I can't think of anybody. And it would not surprise me if, again, Trump decides to run, if that doesn't trigger the indictment and prosecution. And all they have to do is indict him. They don't even have to send him to trial. If during the campaign they indict him and the trial is set for 6 months after the election, which I don't think would be constitutional. I think the trial would have to start prior to the election and the inauguration, constitutionally. But nothing from those people would surprise me. And I don't think the country can afford it. I think he should use the Supreme Court picks, the 1/3 of the court, to build his legacy and then support from here on out conservative candidates. Be the king maker. Don't be the king. You don't have to be the king again. Your supporters love you. And most of us feel he got cheated. But be the king maker. You don't have to be the king again. You don't have anything to prove. Your governing, your policies, the things you did for this country, not only domestically, but internationally, the vision that you had, the advice that you tried to give, as I said earlier, Europe and buying the energy from Russia and others, and you nailed it. Let those things, your Middle East, moving the embassy in Israel to Jerusalem, let those things speak for you and speak for your legacy. Because eventually history will tell the tale of the bullshit, you know, the impeachments. And you, that will tell the story. because they're both bogus. So again, and it's nothing personal. I just don't think that this next, assuming it's going to be a Republican, and we can have free and fair elections, assuming all that, which is a lot, and we get a Republican, we need just to start kicking ass, figuratively. And we need to start turning this country around. And I don't think Trump will have the support, especially from a lot of people in the Senate and the House of Representatives, which is a crying shame. I think it sucks. I could be wrong, but he certainly didn't get all that support in the first term. He didn't start getting more support and loyalty from the Congress until it was pretty damn clear that all this was made up, that it was invented. But before then, shit. That's why the Dems won the House in 2018, which we've discussed. Anyway, I'm getting pretty close. So I will end it there and say thank you for playing along, joining the fight, and listening to The Forgotten Conservative.